Today's New Hampshire primary is part of a 60-year tradition, a tradition that's evolved over the years, getting more attention and in some ways more relevant. WBUR's David Boeri this morning looks back at the history New Hampshire voters have carved out over six decades, giving hope to some candidates and demolishing others.
It's preposterous, of course, to think that New Hampshire, the first in the nation, is actually representative of the nation. As preposterous as thinking that Made in New Hampshire Moxie is the national soda. And it's not even what it used to be either. But if you don't look too closely at the thing, it's still a great show.
Everyone is in there pitching in an endeavor to gauge the mood of the American people.
Invented in 1913, the primary had little bearing on the nation until it went to direct voting in 1952, when this newsreel set the mold of the thing.
The citizens of the Granite State are not easily won.
In fact, they set a pattern by rejecting the sitting president, Harry Truman, in favor of Tennessee Senator Estes Kefauver, who wore a coonskin cap while riding a snowmobile. In reaction, Truman decided not to seek re-election.
What we start here in New Hampshire today, I believe, must succeed next summer and next November.
John Kennedy may have been the first, but he wasn't the last to suggest New Hampshire was the birthplace for saviors. The first campaign to call itself a crusade began here in 1968.
We raised the issue of the war and...
said Senator Gene McCarthy about Vietnam. The anti-war poet declared, "There comes a time when an honorable man simply has to raise the flag." And New Hampshire saluted.
Dover. McCarthy, 47, Johnson, 44. McCarthy, 205, Johnson, 197.
President Johnson won New Hampshire, but in another phenomenon that became a tradition here. In winning, he became the loser because he failed to meet the expectations of a big victory. Johnson's initial response was right on target.
You know, the New Hampshire primaries are unique in politics. They're the only races where anybody can run. And everybody can win.
But soon enough, Johnson announced he wouldn't seek re-election, and the New Hampshire primary was legend. 8 years later, that legend grew with the victory of a largely unknown governor from Georgia. Former Boston Globe reporter Curtis Wilkie witnessed the rise of Jimmy Carter.
Covered this guy that kind of came out of obscurity and really got his start in New Hampshire in 76.
Stayed at people's houses, as I recall.
Oh, yeah, and he carried his own bag.
But in the New Hampshire primaries of yore, there were no more than three networks, no cable, maybe 50 political reporters, and only a handful of primaries across the country.
There were only two or three of us covering Carter. You know, you'd ride around with Carter in the car, not on the press bus. You didn't have a press bus.
By the 80s, it was getting complicated, more theatrical, more media-driven. As witness Ronald Reagan demonstrating how tough he would be with the Soviets while engaged in an argument about who would participate in a candidates' forum.
Would the sound man please turn Mr. Reagan's mic off for a minute?
I am paying for this microphone, Mr.
By the 1990s, the New Hampshire primary had become a media circus. It even had its own Elvis, a.k.a. Bill Clinton. In the issue, new to New Hampshire, of what one Clinton staffer called bimbo eruptions.
Who is Jennifer Flowers? You know her.
Oh, yes.
How do you know? How would you describe your relationship?
Sexcapades, 60 Minutes, and the screaming hounds of the press were at the candidate's heels. And so, too, another challenge.
I did not dodge the draft. I did not do anything wrong.
To this high drama, Clinton made an impromptu and passionate speech a few days before the primary, asking New Hampshire for a second chance.
And he said, if you do, I'll be with you till the last dog dies.
Clinton came in second and sounded like he won.
New Hampshire tonight has made Bill Clinton the comeback kid.
Equally exciting was the second ring of that circus in 1992, involving Pat Buchanan, who took on the first President Bush.
Go, 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 go.
No candidate ever seemed to enjoy himself more than the locked and loaded verbal Tommy gun taking on the Republican establishment.
They hear the shouts of the peasants from over the hill. You watch the establishment, all the knights and barons will be riding into the castle, pulling up the drawbridge in a minute. Because they're coming. All the peasants are coming with pitchforks after them.
Bush may have won more votes, but in the style of Johnson, he was the loser for not winning bigger. In 1996, Buchanan came back to urge voters to mount up and ride to the sound of the guns. This time he won the primary and lost the nomination. New Hampshire was losing its reputation of picking the ultimate winners.
Please welcome the next president of the United States.
By 2008, the candidates came with their own music, pitching to the myths of New Hampshire. And to keep the franchise first in the nation, New Hampshire had moved the primary from the frost heaves of late winter almost to Christmas, but with less of the retailing that had made it uniquely New Hampshire.
And when they asked, how are you going to do it? You're down in the polls. You don't have the money. I answered, I'm going to New Hampshire, and I'm going to tell people the truth.
John McCain and Hillary Clinton even packaged the myth to make New Hampshire the New York, New York of races. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
I want especially to thank New Hampshire. Over the last week, I listened to you, and in the process, I found my own voice.
Which brings us back to what still makes the show interesting, as when the front runner falls. Take Barack Obama in 2008.
Yes, we can to justice and equality.
For all of its distance from the pure picture book primary of old, New Hampshire still relishes its ability to say, no, no, you can't. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm David Boeri.